Welcome to the Creating Seal podcast, where we take our work, our guests, and our conversations seriously.
But we try not to take ourselves too seriously.
Our hosts are here to share with you unique experiences, and hopefully it will inspire you and challenge you to make something stellar.
I have a really interesting guest for you today. I'm at Abstractions Conf for the second time. I think this is their second conference. And I just got out of a talk from Nitya, who gave a really fascinating talk on self-care and how we might be able to think about that. So I'm really excited because I think for a lot of you, self-care is a subject matter that you may or may not feel isolated into, that it's something that is so individualized for yourself that you may or may not know or have any strategies to address that. And what I really found insightful and helpful about her talk was that it allowed for me to think through how I could create things for myself. And she gave some really fascinating examples of ways in which she introduced habits to create better results that were very individualized. And so we'll get into a bunch of that. So I really hope that you're going to enjoy this conversation. I'm super looking forward to it. But Nitya, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you. I'm really, really happy to be here. I'm super excited to talk to you about this.
That's fantastic. So tell us a little bit. So right now you're working for Microsoft, is that right?
That's right. I'm in the developer relations team at Microsoft. I'm a senior program manager based in the U.S., and I focus on the professional and startup developer audiences.
Okay, so how long have you been in that specific category or field?
Oh, I've been in the field of like community and like working with the tech community for maybe 5 years, but I basically was doing that as a side gig because I was doing this as a community organizer.
Yeah.
I've joined Microsoft to do this full time maybe about a year ago, or less than a year, I would say. But my interest in community actually started, coincidentally enough, when I started being a remote worker. So I used to work in Motorola at the time. And I started kind of, for personal reasons, we moved to New York. So I used to telecommute, and I realized like I really needed that connection. So I started attending meetups, got into community, and lo and behold, I was organizing meetups, and then I was organizing conferences. And then I thought, I really like this.
Yeah.
How do I do this full time? And it turned out that role is called developer relations.
Surprise, surprise.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So, you know, a lot of what you were talking about, again, was self-care. And I know you have a PhD and you've got a lot of formal and informal education. How much, if any, of that relates to the topic of self-care, or is there an interconnectivity there at all?
Oh, absolutely. So to kind of give you a little bit about my background, I did a PhD in computer engineering a long time ago. But actually, it was a very exciting time. It was in distributed systems and reliability engineering. And then I joined Motorola for over a decade. And then after that, I was independent for a while. I taught in universities, did training for industry, did a lot of things, and then back in developer relations. And what I found is that in every stage of your career, you do hit a point where you'll burn out, right? And the difference, I would say, is like when I look back at my PhD, I just didn't know I was burning out. But it's PhDs can be very, very hard, right? But I didn't know about it, and we just kind of get through it. And same thing with Motorola. I was there for like a long time, and I didn't know any of these things about burnout. But we all get there at some point, right? We're working really hard. We're not balancing our work and our life. We're not taking care of ourselves. So I found that I kept going through these cycles where I'd be like, oh, my God, I need to take better care of myself. All right, go on a diet, start getting out, travel,
right, like we all do at some point, right?
Exactly. But I never did it systematically. You know, I basically would always be like, oh, you know, just go to the gym, eat healthier, then I'll feel better about myself. And it took me a long time to realize that there's also a part of it which is about our minds and how we think. So you can't just repair the body, right? You got to also figure out how to, like, change your mind. And that's when I started looking at self-care as a kind of like a tool.
Yeah. So about where did that happen sort of in your kind of life cycle, career path? Like, at what point did you acknowledge that self-care, like taking a proactive stance on self-care, needed to be more of a priority against something that might have been passive in the past?
I can almost clearly pinpoint it to about 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
Because a lot of things were happening. We were, let's just face it, the political climate was very kind of fraught. We were all seeing a stress from that. I lost someone close to me. And then in addition to that, you know, I was telecommuting, juggling a kid, job, all of that stuff. But it came to a point, and I think it's not about knowing that you have self-care issues. It's about like getting to the point where you realize I have to do something about it. And my realization was standing in it was a conference. I remember this clearly in Chicago, and standing in front of folks I had known and completely blanking out because I was like, I don't know why I'm not able to like be my full energetic self. And you know, just feeling like this is not right. And it's because like getting to that conference had been on the stint of travel to conference after conference, and we were going out somewhere, et cetera. So a lot of things happened, but the big difference between previous times and that time was that time I was like, okay, I need to like break and take time out and figure this out. So I literally, and I was consulting, so I was lucky. I shut down all my, I said no more new clients for a while, took off for India for a month, right? Disconnected from everything. I literally just spent a month like thinking through what is going on, like what is in my head? How do I parse out all the things that are happening, and then where do I start? And that became actually the first talk I ever did on self-care at ILAconf.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
And what was the either core thesis of that talk at the time? Like, what was the real kind of discovery that you felt needed to be put out there to the world or to an audience?
So you heard me talk a little bit about maybe the 30 days and kind of the sketching. Those were the only two strategies that I had at the time.
Okay.
They came out of that time. And so first, everything you're inspired by stuff, right? So the believe it or not, the 30-day strategy, I was inspired by my family. Because when we went to India, they would be like, you have to eat healthy. So every morning they would chop stuff for me and put it out on a plate. And I would always think like, oh, this is pretty. So when I came back, I took that habit, but I made it intentional. So that was there. And then the second thing was the sketching that I was talking about. It was because I had a kid, we were going to India, and I realized, and that was another realization, that in the stress of work and all of the stuff, I was not being present for the family at all. I wasn't paying attention. And so I decided to do this very silly thing where everywhere we went in India, I would take pictures. But you know how many pictures we all take? We never look back at them, right?
Right.
So I would just take pictures. But then I would sit down at the table when we were having lunch, and I would look at my camera, and I would sketch them. And I would start seeing things that I hadn't seen. Like, there's a sketch that I usually show of an elephant. Its ear is torn off. I was standing right in front of it taking pictures. I didn't notice. But when I was sketching it, I was like, oh. And I realized that we start paying attention. We start actually being physically present when we don't let ourselves be distracted by other things.
That is really fascinating. We become more physically present when we don't allow ourselves to be distracted. So there's an interesting element in there, which was, you know, just prior to that moment, you talked about effectively eliminating all the distractible sources, right? And then getting to a point where you're like, I'm basically in my own, I've got nothing left but me in my own head, at least in a figurative sense, to really focus in on, and the discovery of being, but I'm not, I don't know if I'll phrase this right, but is that in that state, you can actually see and observe more.
Exactly. It was scary because I was like, I walked away from like work for a while.
Yeah.
I literally went to a place where I couldn't see Twitter anymore. Right. So, I mean, I was totally disconnecting.
Yeah.
Simply so I could stop the noise and like try to figure out what exactly was in my head. And I also read a lot at the time. So I think that the combination, I didn't even know there was such a thing as self-care, to be honest. I didn't know the term.
Mm.
All I knew is by slowing myself down, I was able to get a handle on it. And of course, I was getting all the like health effects of it, right? You kind of felt weary, your pressure was going up, all of these things. So it became what are the habits I'm doing that I can actually see a measurable improvement in metrics that I can measure?
Right.
And then it's like, oh, this worked. Took me about 3 or 4 months afterwards to start, because we're all engineers.
Right.
It kicks in, it's like, oh, wait, there's a pattern here. I need to be able to like create a framework. And it's at that point I was like, okay, there must be more to it. And ILAconf was actually a fantastic conference for that because, to your point, self-care is one of those things that we don't talk about because we all feel, you know, we're vulnerable. No one wants to show weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
The society is like, okay, if you show a weakness, we're going to use it against you. So, you know, you have that, like, self-preservation.
Yeah.
It was the first conference where I was completely free to like say and share a story without, and I remember being very emotional. It's the first time I was ever really emotional about a talk. And I think that's when I realized, hey, I'm onto something here in terms of the fact that when I talked to people, they would reflect back to me other things I could try. So I went from like, I need to figure all this out by myself to like, oh, every time someone comes to me and says, that was awesome, and here's something I did, I'm like, can I use that?
Right.
And yeah. Even now, it just happened, right?
Uh-huh.
So that, I think, was the part where I was realizing we're not alone in this.
Yeah.
Everyone's got the same problem. And if we talk about it, you're invariably going to connect to people on a very visceral level. And then we'll figure something out. But you don't feel alone, and you don't feel it was worthless.
I don't know if you, the strategies that you presented, mm-hmm. I believe you presented 8 different ones.
Yeah.
One that really stood out to me that I found personally really relevant right now, which was a support system. And you specifically said ally up.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And it kind of sounds to me like that's a part of it. And that in allying up, in creating that community that supports you, and you gave some great examples of, you know, somebody that just, they bring stress to your life, and asking that friend or that counterpart to just be like, hey, if they come up, can you just
nudge
them off?
Yes.
Right. I mean, it's, if you could speak to that a little bit more, like that was an example of a method you used, but what I heard a lot of was create an ecosystem around you that can support this for you, right? Versus just just know that it's there, right? Like, oh, I struggle with this. Great. But if you can help me, that's even better.
Yeah. So I kind of made that, you know, the one takeaway message is like, when you get to a point where you're feeling good about yourself, start being selfless and look at community care. So that kind of fits into this too, which is when you start relying on other people, you say, hey, I need your help. Turns out most people would love to help. They're like, oh, okay, I understand. Now I'm seeing the real you. How can I help? And they're willing to do it. So it creates true connections. But the second part of it is now they will tell you in return, hey, I have this problem. Can you help? And you never knew. The biggest problem, I think, in our society is we all see Instagram lives. We don't see the real issues people are facing behind it until the day where it's so late that you're like, I never knew about it. And you're like, what is going on? So to me, this was about ally up, started first with family because they already know, right? They're like, you know, why are you so stressed about all these things, et cetera? But then started going to community as an example, right? Like, so when you, for example, codes of conducts in conferences, you start putting these boundaries that say, if someone comes this, can you please handle it this way? That's an example. Third, in business, and Harvard Business Review has done this too, the notion of a posse. Like, don't go into a meeting mm-hmm. with very alpha types by yourself. Like, get people who can back you up or who can reinforce what you're saying. And then even in this conference, one of the things we do in New York is we run this Global Diversity CFP Day, which is for first-time speakers. Same thing. A lot of people are terribly afraid of public speaking. It's kind of like a funny fact. I don't think it's really a fact. Yeah. But they say, you know, the number one fear in America is public speaking. It turns out if they can talk to another friend and say, can you sit in the front row where I can see you? You overcome that fear, right? So that if this has happened to me, if some person gets up in the audience and asks you a question that kind of like makes you nervous because it's not really relevant, but you don't know how to answer, this person can step up and say, hey, you know what? Actually, that's not relevant.
Mm.
And I have a follow through that I can do on this, right? So in all of these situations, that person needs to be in that context, not always, but in that context, they need to be stronger than you. They need to have a more or a less stressful, higher self-esteem, more stable emotional state.
Yeah.
So they can tackle this. And that's what the ally thing is.
Yeah. That's great. And so I'm curious if, you know, I came to this conference not knowing many people, and I feel lucky in the sense that I'm much more extroverted. So I feel more comfortable meeting people. So any thoughts or advice for individuals that are put in that situation, maybe at a conference or otherwise, where you truly don't know the others? And so it might feel from the onset that I don't have any allies, right? And maybe even you are a speaker and don't know anybody. And so, you know, what do I do? Do I, you know, fly everybody, my whole posse out with me? You know, like, what can I do instead? Any strategies or thoughts to that?
Absolutely. So I've been a conference organizer and I'm a community organizer. Your organizer is your friend. You'd be surprised at how many organizers understand and value first-time speakers. I mean, very selfishly, first-time speakers bring new perspective to any topic, right? Like, professional speakers, they've got it pat. First-time speakers are like, I have something new to say, and we want to hear them. So as an organizer, we really do go the extra mile. So there are things that have been done, I know, for instance, like having speaker mentors up front so that you have someone to practice with. ELOCONF is a great example. I've been speaking in tech for years. Never ever took a speaker mentor. I'm like, I know how to speak in tech, right? Not a big deal. IllaConf was actually a personal story, not a tech story. So it wasn't objective to subjective. And I didn't realize how emotional I'd get. I had a speaker mentor. The entire time she sat in the audience and I talked to her, she'd done this before, like reviewed it with me. So whenever I felt like, you know, people are not going to understand what I'm talking about, I could look at her and she would be like, no, 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 we talked about this, we know. So that's one thing, meaning that find a mentor, a speaker mentor, if you will, in the community that's already at the conference. The organizers usually will try to help you with this. If not, I would say, ask another speaker. You would be surprised how many speakers have walked that thing before you. The first thing they'll be like, yes, I'm here for you, I'll be there. For all my talks, and I've done this for others, you'll see people showing up saying, hey, you're talking, I'm here, right? We understand, we're there for you. Third thing, and I cannot tell you enough, vulnerability is actually the strongest form of connection to an audience. Upfront, and this is actually one of the self-care routines I'm trying, I'm still a work in progress, but self-acceptance and just like acknowledging your fear is one of the best ways to defang it. So get up there and say, hey, I'm a first-time speaker. I'm going to mess up, and I'm really nervous, but I hope you will give me positive feedback at the end, and that's it, right? And you'll be surprised how many people, I have messed up like 2 decades into a speaking career. People will come up to me afterwards and say, I still got what you were saying, and it's awesome. Because human thing is like, you know, we want to help.
Compassion, yeah.
But if on the flip side, you're like, I got this, this is no big deal, then people don't feel like they need to like do anything. So, yes.
So I find it slightly ironic that speakers often are in a small community that isolates them, especially, you know, because they are, I know that for some, you know, that they kind of elevate them as experts. And so there's an unattainability about them or an unrelatability, yet ironically that they're just like everyone else in the room.
Yes.
They just happen to be the one standing at the front of it. And that has a tendency to create a sense of isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that many speakers I've spoken with, like one of the greatest things you can do is just say hi to them, right?
Yes.
And I mean, it's even if you don't agree with their content or heck, even if you didn't feel like you thought that what they were saying was great, just having the connection and not feeling like I can't connect with them was a real hindrance. And so, you know, creating that bond. So for people who aren't speakers, but are just attendees, but still have that isolation or that feeling of isolation because they're not there with anyone else, thoughts for them, is it still to go back to the organizers and maybe seek an advocate there or?
So in a conference this size, I think it always helps if organizers come up with activities, icebreakers, that force people to engage in ways that overcomes their fear. So that's there. And I'll give you an example. A long time before, quite a few years, I can't remember, and we had to reboot a meetup in New York. And I remember me and the organizer, both of us were new organizers at the time, we decided to do an icebreaker, right, just to kind of get people to know each other. And we came up with a funny icebreaker, which is we got pictures of famous scientists, and as you kind of registered, you just had to pick up one of the pictures of which one resonated with you. And then in the room, there were just scientists' pictures put up, and you had to go stand under that, and whoever was there, you had to talk to them. That was the rule.
Right.
And it's interesting that sometimes humans are, like, they need that nudge, meaning that you don't believe in yourself. You think you're going to say something stupid, people are going to snub you, you don't want to be hurt. So your self-preservation instinct is high. But when someone tells you, you got to do this, I'm on you, you better go do this, they do it. And then they find it wasn't so hard, right? So that kind of icebreaker was our thing of saying, if two of you came in together and registered together, you have to pick different photos. We're going to split you up.
Yeah,
right? And so that's what I mean by organizers help facilitate this. But if you can do that, if you are by yourself, one of the things I always say is remember that opportunities are rare. Like you will always regret. I'll go off at a tangent now, but one of my favorite authors is Dan Ariely. If you've never heard, have you heard of Dan Ariely?
I have not, no.
Duke professor of behavioral economics. He writes a book called Irrational, Predictably Irrational. Done a lot of stuff on behavioral psychology. And he'll talk about the fact that regret is one of the biggest emotions, like the biggest incentives. The power of regret is really strong, right? So in this case, if let's say you went to a conference and your fear kept you from talking to anyone, you go back home and then you're like, I could have, that person who knows the stuff that I really want to talk about, sitting right next to me, and I couldn't say a word, right? that regret is actually going to be something you want to use to fuel yourself the next time. Like, hey, it shouldn't happen again. And what I have seen is, like, sometimes you have to psych yourself into it and say, what's the worst? They're going to snub me, big deal. I tried. And that has become my new thing. It's like, you have to embrace failure and be like, I tried and I failed and it's okay. Moving on, because really, in the bigger scheme of things, you don't remember half the tiny parts.
Right.
But if you did connect, you will remember that friendship forever. So my advice to people going to the first time is find people in the community. Like, if you want to connect a speaker, do some research on them. Make sure when you go talk to them that you respect the fact that they may be having a talk and are stressed, or they're coming down from a talk, that kind of stuff. But otherwise, when you talk to them, bring up that, hey, I read this, or I like this about you. Can we talk about it? They will. And if it's just total strangers, ask anything. My literal question always is, where are you from?
Yeah.
And I've heard that that's not actually a very good question to ask. But I find it's very fascinating. You're from New York, too, or you're East Coast.
Uh-huh.
If you dig deep enough, we all have something in common.
Absolutely.
Just find it. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that advice. Just if you just dig a little bit, a question is oftentimes better than no question. At least it can inspire conversation. And that's really fantastic. So
my name is Amy Denton, and I wanted to take a brief moment to tell you about my YouTube channel, selfteach.me. If you're looking to level up your web design or developer skills, my videos are just for you. I try to make it fun and interject a little humor as I geek out over things like CSS tips and tricks, building one-off React components, what is Git, and how to install it, and how to work on a team with it. I hope you'll join me. Go to codingzeal.com/selfteachme. Link in the notes. Now back to the show.
Just going into, of the eight, did you refer to them as principles or strategies?
I was thinking of it as a toolkit. If I can digress, these were examples.
Please.
But
mm-hmm.
In previous talks, I actually just give two.
Hmm.
So the idea is that these are my tools. This is mm-hmm. how I do them. But I wanted to have folks have their own guidance, like, how do you come up with your own? And I used to use a packing analogy and a calendar analogy that explains it. And I'll explain one of them to you.
Please, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So I travel a lot.
Yeah. So packing is common.
So packing is common.
And so are calendars.
So my thing is that we are often overwhelmed in life, right? And a brain can only take so much. Self-care is about giving your brain a break. Don't let so many things get packed in. So the analogy I give is, if you go travel, let's say if you have check-in luggage, you have the tiny thing. With check-in luggage, you can walk into the plane and you're out. You're done. That's the size of your brain. The problems you can pack in your brain should be no more than, think of it as check-in luggage. I have to put enough so I can fly, right? So at that point, if someone else is bringing their problems to you, you'd be like, there is no space in my check-in luggage. I can't do it. It's already full, right? Can't do it. Because if I put stuff in, I can no longer take it on the flight. I have to check it in. No, sorry, carry-on versus check-in. You know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And that's now going to cost me more time. But in emergencies, it's going to happen. Someone's going to be like, I have a problem. You need to help. And you have to take that burden on, which will have an impact on you. You won't need to make it clear that this is not normal. And the analogy then is, hey, I could have just carried on my stuff and gone free. I'm taking your burden on because I know it's important and no one can help you. But you need to know that by doing this, I've now had to expand it to become a check-in luggage. That's $50. Just know it wasn't free, right?
Right.
And the idea there is, we don't normalize the things that add burdens to our lives. That's the problem. We keep normalizing everything. We're like, oh yeah, we'll just life's throwing one more thing at me. I'm going to deal with it. You're at work. They're like, hey, we need to have this shipped tomorrow. You're like, fine, I'll put in 3 extra hours, right? You keep doing this and you just keep taking all the hits, but the only one who's getting impacted is you.
Right.
And the others don't see it. So you need to stop normalizing the behavior, but putting costs to it.
Yeah.
And this one basically says there is a cost to taking that on. And the same way the calendar analogy, this is a space one. Some people prefer time. It's like, look at the calendar. There's only 24 hours in a day. Take away 8 hours for sleep. There's only 16 left. Take away 8 hours for work. There's only another 8 left. In that 8, your commute will take off 2 hours. Maybe you watch a movie with your family that takes a couple of hours. You're getting ready for work. There's really very little wiggle room in your life. So when you think about, I need to put in an extra 2 hours for work, where is that coming from? It's probably coming from your sleep, right? And so you need to think about opportunity cost here. What else could I have been doing in those 2 hours that I gave away? Was that the 2 hours I could have spent with my son? Then I need to stop. So the toolkits, that the examples I give, usually if you look at it in a high level, will fall into this framework. there is always a space or a time factor. There's always a cost to you. And the first step is you need to recognize that there is a cost. You need to recognize that you are taking on a burden. You need to assess that cost, find out how you can either mitigate it, which is what the control things were, or manage it. If you can't remove the sources of the cost, then you have to find a way to reduce the cost itself.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just have to make sure that you've got money in the bank.
Right, right.
That's the self-esteem.
Right.
You just keep money in the bank so you can pay the cost when you need to.
So if I'm listening to this now and I go, you know, into tomorrow wanting to really change up, you know, acknowledging that I need something different, right? And self-care, I know I need it. I know I need to start. But I feel overwhelmed, ironically, by what do I do? Do I, you know, do I drop off everything and fly to India for the month? You know, like
that's right. Right.
That's the answer. Okay, that's what we're getting.
No.
So not this the answer.
Some recently, I started thinking about it too. That self-care is a privilege thing too, and that's kind of where community comes in.
Yeah.
I had the privilege of being able to take time off to work on myself. Everyone doesn't. This is where community care comes in. When others don't have the privilege, those who do should extend their privilege to help them. But that said, yes, I think the smallest basic thing you can do is establish good habits for yourself in terms of physical health. So it's like a Maslowian hierarchy, right?
Right.
First, work on the simple things that you can easily measure results on. Eat healthy, sleep healthy, try to get an exercise in some way. And those are the 30 days routines. That was my first thing. It's like set a routine, get someone, an ally to make you accountable, mm-hmm. make that happen. If you get a small win, that will boost your self-esteem. You'll be able to go to level two, right? Certain things like the place where I was talking about, being able to self-appreciation, self-acceptance, those all take time, right? Like to feel like I'm okay with people thinking I'm bad. The number one thing that I feel a lot of the younger generation and even us these days struggle with is peer approval. A lot of the things we do are because we want other people to think well of us. We want a manager to think well of us. We want some random person to think that we're good people, right? So we kind of bend ourselves backwards, putting ourselves at risk so we can do things that others will approve of.
Mm-hmm.
So once you fixed your physical health, like food, exercise, get those into routine because they become very mechanical and you don't have to think about them. Just periodically go repair them because you will fall off. That's okay. Forgive yourself. Start again. But once you've got that, then comes the hard work. You really need to ask yourself deep questions like identity. Who are you? Are you comfortable with who you are, right? Do you accept that there are certain things you're never going to be able to do? Because if you're striving to do things that you can never accept, that's a road to failure.
Yeah.
Are you okay with not everyone in the world approving of you? And walk away. So this is where toxicity is very, very kind of important. Know the things that harm you the most and put guardrails around them. Until you're strong enough to deal with them, it's better you avoid them. There is no shame in running away.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
There's no shame.
There's a reason it's available
yourself.
To you.
Yes,
yes.
It's totally an option.
Yeah.
Run away from the things that don't until you're strong enough to deal with them. But I think that really is where the core of self-care comes in. And a lot of it has to do with just reading. And kind of, so this is actually interesting. Someone I talked to told me there's a lot of philosophy involved in various religions and cultures, but they told me one thing. Said you can't give a person knowledge, they have to seek it. And I think that is very, very important. You can't tell people about self-care. It'll only work the day they get up and be like, I need to do this.
Right.
Until they get up. And
when
like,
they have the personal motivation, yeah.
Yeah, it'll never work. So that's why it took me like 20 years to get up one day and be like, okay, all the random just go to gym, that didn't fix it. I have to get up and learn. Until you get to that moment, it's not going to happen.
That's right. It seems like there's an interesting broken irony between what it sounds like happens often or feels like happens often, which is prescriptive self-care, right?
Yes.
You need to do this, right? You need to take a break. You need to take a vacation. You need to, you need to, you need to.
Yeah.
And it's always been interesting to me because rarely have I heard, unless it's coming from a really trusted source, a very close family friend or a family member or my spouse for that matter, you know, otherwise it's, I often take it as kind of like, screw you. Like, what do you mean? Like, wait, I'm the one that decides that my self-care needs to change. I'm the one that needs to own that. So if I am in a leadership position where I'm noticing that somebody is struggling, how can I support them best?
So there are two parts to this. One is empathy is important. It's very hard to have empathy unless you have lived experience. And I have noticed this, right? A lot of people who have not walked in my shoes when I say or do something will interpret it through their lens to say, you're complaining about something, without recognizing that, hey, I don't have the same background as you. What you're facing, you're a person of color, you're like, you know, whatever, mom. There are certain biases that you see, I don't. You may not see that, right? So first thing first is ask yourself, can I empathize? If not, I need to like learn, like listen and first figure out what is it. If you don't have a shared experience, chances are you're not going to understand it. Second, and I can't emphasize this enough, I think the only real way we can improve it is if we share stories about how we, anyone who has actually introspected, come up with a solution, if you share that story, right? Because what we need is for people to see themselves in you and be like, you're like me, I can use that tool. The biggest problem I see in that there's a whole self-care industry that is out of reach for the common person. It doesn't matter how many times you tell me I need to, like, you know, get a meditation app and, you know, enroll in a gym and all of that. Gyms cost money. Meditation apps require time. I do not have that, right? Like, what if I don't? But if you then show me a mom like me who's dealing with all this and she's like, you know, I started with cutting vegetables at 5 a.m. and eating them and now I'm healthy, I'll be like, I can try that because we have some shared experience in common. This is something that fits my budget, my schedule, and it feels accessible to me, right? So the bigger picture for me is based on if you are in a leadership position, listen. See if you can empathize and try to connect, but don't try to prescribe solutions because chances are you don't know. The second step is find someone who might have had that experience that you can connect people to and then support them through the process of whatever their recovery is going to be, right? I think empathy and the ability to kind of proactively see this not as a secondary thing, but like as core to the health of your employees and your community, that's a mindset we all need.
Yeah, that's very resonant for me. Speaking a little personally between my spouse and I, it's maybe a month ago, she was saying to me, she goes, do you know David Allen and the Getting Things Done? If you've heard of it, he wrote a book called Getting Things Done, or the acronym was GTD. And I looked at her and I was like, I've never been more attracted to you right now. Like, I've been following those principles for 12 years of my life, you know. And she goes, oh yeah, did you hear about the podcast? I'm like, oh my gosh, like, oh my God, do you, oh my God. You know, I was elated. And so we're talking, we're talking about it. She's trying to implement the the principles and the methods into her workday and her schedule. And I was helping, air quotes here. I was trying to help.
Okay.
And she stopped me and was like, Adam, I'm at a different stage than you are with this. And I'm learning at a different pace. I know different things and I need to learn this for me. Mm-hmm. Wonderfully, she was a high school teacher for a long time.
Oh, I love teachers.
Right? And so she understood the pedagogy and the model through which this works. Me, you know, I was the, you know, I'll call myself the entitled brat of like, yes, but I'm the one with your answers, right?
Yes.
You know, like, I mean, wait, you should hear it from me because I know your thing. I know your problems better than the book does.
God, yes. It's so tempting to be like, I can solve your problem for
right,
you.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, but it hit me so hard that context is so relevant and so key to having empathy. You know, I think to a certain extent, and I don't know if you'd agree or disagree, but I feel like empathy gets thrown around a lot, but it's actually a misinterpretation of the word. Empathy being, I understand what you're going through, versus sympathy, which is I can see and, right? So empathy, I truly understand.
I relate. Yes.
You know, and that, to me, is the part that I have to remind myself about a lot, is that to empathize means I have to have a true relatability. And especially when it comes to growth or self-care, that your story and my story are always going to be different. And you will learn it at the time that makes sense for you, and I will at my time.
I like to use the word cultivate for this. Like, you have to cultivate empathy, because you can't just assume that, oh, I'm empathetic. I'm an empathetic person because this is who I am. That's not true. You have to cultivate empathy in context, because for every new person or situation you find yourself in, you have to like really be open and ask, am I seeing this in the same light as the person who is kind of suffering right now, right? And I think the counterpoint of that is guilt, right? Like a lot of us, sometimes we do see, and we know we can't have empathy because we're not going to be in that shoe. Like we have, maybe that sympathy is a good word there, I don't know. But then you struggle, like, how can I fix this? Mm-hmm. I don't have any power to fix this. How do I do this?
But I want to help.
I want to help, but I don't know how to fix this. And then you kind of beat your head on a wall and you feel bad. So there's lots of places for you to kind of get lost. But at the core, I think the way I think about it is start with one. Like, try to make an impact on one person, or like ask one person for help and help one person in return. If we all did that, then, you know, we can kind of like make a difference.
That's fantastic. Well, you know, I know that your time was limited, and so I really appreciate this. I really do. I took so much away from your talk. I've taken so much away from this conversation. I hope you listening have done the same. I know that Abstractions is going to be posting the talks online.
Yes.
So if you have the chance, please take a watch through it if you haven't already. I think you're going to get a lot from it. And not to mention, I think we're underestimating the pure humor and energy that you bring to the stage. I mean, I was blown away by it. You were just on fire. So it was,
oh my God,
wonderful.
Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful to watch you.
I will credit my family. I have a very, very rambunctious 10-year-old. He keeps me very grounded.
Yes. I heard you mention that you guys are same shoe size right now.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes, we are. I have to like, see, he's got his eyes on my shoes now. But yeah, we found that out the hard way, because we were going somewhere and he messed up his gym shoes. And I was like, wear mine. And he was against it. He's like, I'm not going to wear, you know, mom's shoes. And then he wore, just like, they fit me okay. And now he feels he needs to have input into what I buy, because God knows if he ever needs another emergency.
Right. Go to mom.
Yes.
Go to mom. That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much. How can people get in touch with you or find you on the internet or website? What's the best route?
Absolutely. So I do own Nithya on Twitter, uh-huh. Like I mentioned. So my name is Nithya, Nitya. You can find me on Twitter. My DMs are usually open. I travel a lot, so sometimes I'm slow to respond. And my intentions are good, but sometimes I will exercise self-care and run away from. Like I will uninstall. That's another thing. I will uninstall Twitter when I go home. My 10-year-old has mandated it that if I'm not at a conference, I cannot have it on my mobile. I can have it on my desktop and use it, you know, once or twice, but mobile makes it so easy, so I will take it off. But that said, my DMs are open. I'm on LinkedIn. You can connect to me there. I do try, especially, I'm like always willing to help and listen. Worst case scenario, if you can't find me on any of those, I think there is, I do have nithya.dev as a site, and I think I have an email contact on there.
Okay, wonderful. And but before we go, I wanted to give you the opportunity, if you could incept anything into as the takeaway for any of the people in the audience or those listening, is there a one, two, or three, like a core takeaway that you really hope people hear or heard?
Yes. I think I say there are two takeaways. First, you have to be strategic about self-care. You absolutely must incorporate it into your life just like you would do any other exercise, because it's important to your professional health as well. So be strategic about healthcare, and once you've been strategic, help destigmatize it for everyone else. Talk about it so that no one else feels bad talking about it. And then the second takeaway is always put on your oxygen mask first. People say it a lot, but it's true. Because until you're at a point where you're feeling like, you know, empowered enough and feeling healthy enough to take on other people's problems, don't take on other people's problems. But when you do feel that healthy, then start extending it to community care. Go from self-care to selfless care. Give a hand to someone else in trouble. And yeah, that's it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Nithya. It's been a pleasure, to say the least.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Very welcome. My name is Adam Cuppy, and I've been your host today. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out. You can email us at podcast@codingzeal.com. You can, of course, find us on the Twitterverse and just about everywhere else. Thank you so much, and have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Creating Zeal podcast. Like what you heard? Drop some stars in your streaming service of choice, and then tell your mom, a friend, a colleague, a client, or someone you just meet on the street. We'd love to hear from you. Feel free to drop us an email at podcast@codingzeal.com.